Let's talk about Jesus, the King of Kings is He, the Lord of Lords Supreme, O blessed eternity, the great I am, the way, the truth, the life, the door. Let's talk about Jesus more and more. Let's talk about Jesus. Last time I talked about the simple questions that are the most important are, is Jesus or was Jesus happy? And on first blush, it seems like that would be obvious, but it isn't so obvious. We're going to talk about a different part of Jesus today. As we look at Jesus, Ephesians says that we grew up unto Him in all things, even the Christ Jesus. And in Galatians 5 and 22, it talks about the fruit of the Spirit. And it talks about a whole list of things in there. It talks about joy or happiness at the start. And it proceeds on down through to the one we're going to talk about today, which is gentleness. Okay? Gentleness. In 2 Samuel 22 and 96, David, in the midst of a song, says, "Thy gentleness hath made me great." God's gentleness had made him great. So the question is this morning, as we talk about Jesus, was Jesus gentle? Was Jesus gentle? Be careful in how you answer. We all have a picture of Jesus in our head. Picture of Jesus sitting with a small lamb in his lap. The very epitome of gentleness. We all have stories that we remember, like in John the 8th chapter, when the woman was caught in the very act of adultery. They brought her to Jesus and expected Jesus to condemn her, as they all had. And when Jesus had said and worked down to the scores of things and said, "You without sin cast the first stone," and looked up and suddenly there was no one there to accuse her, he said with great gentleness, "Neither do I condemn thee. Go and sin no more." In Matthew, the 19th chapter, verse 14, "There were brought unto him little children, that he should put his hands on them and pray. And the disciples rebuked them, but Jesus said, Suffer little children, forbid them not to come to me, for of such is the kingdom of heaven." A picture of gentleness. Picture of gentleness. And Luke, the 22nd chapter, when the mob came to take Jesus, Peter, in his enthusiasm, misplaced though it was, drew out his sword and sliced off the servant's ear. Quite a shot, if you think about it. That would be a shot to get the ear and nothing else. But sliced off the servant's ear. And Jesus, in your mind, right, picked up the ear and slapped it back on. Is that the way you view that? Or did Jesus pick up the ear, hold up the spot, and it was healed with great gentleness? That's the way we prefer. That's the way we like. That's the way we love to think of Jesus as gentle. But that same Jesus, that same Jesus who did those gentle things, also was very gentle when he said to the money changers in the temple, "Get ye out of my Father's house. You don't belong here. This isn't your house. You're not going to do this here." And he took a whip and he drove them out. Is that your idea of a picture of Jesus' gentleness? A new sword here, so I have to break it in. In John, the 11th chapter, Jesus is talking about his friend and his apostles, disciples' friend, Lazarus, who he had received word from the people around that Lazarus was extremely sick. even to the point of dying, he was sick. And Jesus, rather than what we would anticipate, the hurried concern, the rush to get there, said, "Nah, we'll stay here for a while. We'll stay here for a while. He's just asleep." And Lazarus died. And then Jesus went. We know he raised Lazarus from the dead. But is that your picture of gentleness? Is that your picture of gentleness, to sit while one of your friends dies? Sometimes Jesus could be a little different than our concept of gentleness in his speech. He called the Pharisees whited sepulchres, graves, stinking graves. Not extremely gentle in our eyes. When the apostles in Matthew, the 17th chapter, had some people come that had demons and they couldn't cast them out, Jesus said, if you just had faith, a little faith, like faith as a grain of mustard seed that you can barely see, you could say to yonder mountain, be ye removed, and it'd be gone. In essence, he's saying, you have no faith at all. If you had grain of mustard seed, it would be gone. The mountain. We're talking about this right here. Is that your idea of gentleness? Jesus said in Matthew 11, chapter and verse 28, take my yoke upon you and learn of me, for I am meek and lowly in heart. Galatians 6 and 1 says, if you have someone who is overtaken in a fault, to restore such a one, you go to that person in a spirit of meekness, lest you yourself be found wanting. In Ephesians, the 4th chapter, verses 1 through 2, it lists some things that we need as we work. Now I say that, wrong place. Galatians doesn't read like Ephesians. Doesn't even sound like Ephesians. I, therefore, the prisoner of the Lord, beseech you that you walk worthy of the vocation wherewith you are called, with all lowliness and meekness, long-suffering, forbearing one another in love. In 1 Peter, it talks about the wife who is a believer, of an married to an unbeliever, that she is to impress him with her meek heart. But meekness and gentleness, even though you look them up in your topical and you look them up in your concordance, are not the same thing. Meekness and gentleness are not the same thing. One is inward based, the other one is outward based. So a person who is meek, as Jesus was meek, thinks of themselves and puts themselves, as they're thinking about themselves, in a position of lowliness. It's inward directed. A meek person is how they're thinking about themselves. But gentleness is defined as a mildness combined with tenderness. A mildness combined with tenderness, and I would add to that, a mildness combined with tender actions. Because gentleness is outside, not inside. Meekness is inside. Gentleness is outside. And so we're to be gentle. In 1 Thessalonians, the 2nd chapter, verse 7, it talks about When the apostles were there, they came to share the gospel with them, and there were all manner of people there debating with them. They had the temptation to be flattering. They had the temptation to take privileges that they were owed, but they really didn't take. And it says, we were gentle coming among you. We were gentle coming among you. In 2 Timothy, the second chapter, verse 24, it says, a servant of the Lord must not strive, but be gentle unto all men, apt to teach, patient, in meekness, instructing those that oppose themselves. In meekness, being gentle. In Titus, the third chapter, it talks about not being brawlers, but gentle in his approach. To speak evil of no man, to be no brawlers, but gentle, showing all meekness unto all men. James, it talks about the wisdom of God is gentle and easy to be entreated. And in 1 Peter, it talks about servants and masters and how the Christian servants were instructed to serve their masters no matter whether they were gentle or not. But certainly it would have been easier if they'd been gentle. Certainly would have been easier. So remember, what we're trying to determine is, was Jesus gentle? And to determine if Jesus was gentle, we have to determine what gentleness is. There are some concerns involving gentleness. What we think about gentleness may not be what involves the way we use a word in our normal language. But godly gentleness involves several things, and we want to talk about those this morning. The first thing it involved, obviously, is meekness. Godly gentleness requires that I be meek. And why should I be meek? Well, Peter said, in quoting the Psalms, that if the righteous scarcely be saved, where shall then lawful and unrighteous appear? Where will they be? I have to understand that I am saved not because of anything that I did, not because of how good I might be, not because of the things I've done. I'm saved because I asked Jesus to be able to take care of his sacrifice, to take advantage of his sacrifice. And that's the only reason I am saved. If the righteous scarcely be saved is a quote from Psalms. Fact of the matter is, if the righteous, as we call them righteous, would not be saved, there wouldn't be scarcely to it. You and I would not be saved if it weren't for Jesus. And if we forget that in our dealings with one another, if we forget that in considering ourselves, then gentleness becomes very difficult. It gets derailed into other things. So my relationship with God has a lot to do with gentleness. And the second thing is my motivation. If I'm dealing with something and I need to be gentle, my motivation has to be love. Has to be love. I can do the same thing, but not be gentle because it isn't motivated by love at that moment. So the parent in the middle of Walmart whose child is throwing a conniption fit. Conniption is a word. If you haven't looked it up, don't, because I don't think it's in there yet. Child is throwing a conniption fit, and they pick up the child and royally, aggressively tan their hide right there in the middle of the aisle. are probably doing it out of embarrassment more than out of love. Not that they didn't need correction, but the motivation at that moment is embarrassment. The question they need to ask is, how would I be responding in my own living room with no one else there, no one else to see this? Would I be responding in the same way? And if it's embarrassment that's driving it, they wouldn't be responding the same way. So I have to look at my motivation for how I'm going to do anything with anybody, be it our brothers or not our brothers, anybody. My motivation should be love and concern for them. Remember, we talked about happiness, and Destry mentioned in his prayer. We talked about happiness, that Jesus' motivation was looking forward to our being saved. We have to consider our motivation and keep it love all the time. And that is impossibly exaggerated as long as we keep our meekness in line, as long as I keep that in mind. So if I'm trying to be gentle with someone, I have to keep in mind my relationship with God and my motivation, and I have to think about what my anticipated response is going to be. Not my response, what the anticipated response of the other thing is going to be. Because gentleness has a goal. The goal, first of all, is not to do harm. In medicine, we have a saying that whatever you do, do no harm. So if you can't think of something good to do, don't do anything. That's what my dad would say. But in medicine, we say, if you can't do good, do no harm. Say you don't know. Don't do anything. Find somebody that can do something. But do no harm. Do no harm. So when I'm trying to be gentle with you, or you're trying to be gentle with me, or someone else, I have to consider what I'm doing and how I'm doing, and I have to consider, what am I trying to accomplish here? What is my ultimate goal? What am I trying to accomplish with what I'm doing? And make sure that my actions fit that goal. Because if they don't, I won't be gentle. So we have to look at our meekness, our relationship with God, our motivation, which should be love, and the anticipated response of the recipient. And fourth, and these may vary in order, I have to have empathy or understanding with the feelings and capabilities of the other person or the other thing. I have this rose in front of me. I have to be infinitely aware of how fragile those petals are if I intend to pick it up and move it without damaging it. I can't think of them as cardboard. I can't think of them as steel. I have to think of them as rose petals. So I have to consider its capabilities, and when we're talking about people, their feelings. That's hard to do sometimes. It's hard to do to understand other people's feelings, other people's circumstances, other people's reasons, other people's motivations. Those things are hard for us to discern. But we have to try. We have to try. Because I don't want to be picking up this rose with fingers of a bricklayer. Hope there's no bricklayers here. I don't want to be doing that. And the last one I wrote down is, we have to have consideration of the consequences of my actions, whether I do them or whether I don't do them. I want you to consider, if you're out in front of the building here and you have a small child, let's say, we're not going to make it too small, 4 or 5, small child, 4 or 5, you're standing there, you're the parent, and you see that child running for the road. Takes off, the children will do, and runs for the road. And you know that you need to grab that child's arm before they get to the road. How hard do you grab that child's arm? Well, it depends. If there's nothing coming and you grab that child's arm as if there's a semi coming and leave a bruise, that's not gentleness. And if you see a semi coming and you grab that child's arm as if there's nothing coming, that's not gentleness. We apply the pressure that's required. So if we look at this rose, and I want to affect this rose, I have to consider my relationship with the rose. I'm bigger than it is, slightly. Stronger than it is, slightly. Whether it's more prickly or I'm more prickly depends on the day. It's prettier than I am. But I have to consider myself in the rose before I decide I'm going to pick it up and move it. I have to consider what my motivation is. I have a different way of picking up that rose. If it's just a wild rose in the middle of something else that I don't want it there, it's going to be picked up fairly aggressively, and I'll probably get poked because I don't want it. If I'm picking it up to give it to Margaret for a gift at the shakes this morning, then I pick it up very carefully and very gently. And my motivation is preservation of the rose. And my anticipated response, if I do it correctly, is that that rose will be in the same shape after I picked it up as before I picked it up. My anticipated response, if I pick it up like a bricklayer, is it won't be the same shape. And I won't have accomplished a gift of Maggie like I wanted to. I will be giving her a handful of crushed rose petals. I won't have accomplished what I'm trying to do. I'm aware of its capabilities. I don't know if it has feelings or not. Sorry. But I'm aware of its capabilities and its weaknesses. And I'm aware of the consequences should I do it wrong. Because if I pick it up too heavy, it's going to be crushed. And if I pick it up too lightly, it's going to hit the floor and I'm going to step on it. So what is gentleness? Because Jesus had all these things. We know he did. He had the Spirit without measure. He had all these things. But he certainly didn't appear gentle in our way of thinking sometimes. I want you to think about gentleness with just these two words. Just enough. Just enough. Not too much. Not too little. Just enough. So when Jesus, in his dealing with us, had the meekness to make himself one of us, to as the Son of God, who thought himself not going out of bounds to call him worthy with God the Father, but made himself of no reputation and took upon him the form of a servant, you and I. And Jesus' motivation was love. His motivation was to save us. And the response that he was looking for was acceptance of his sacrifice. Did he always get it? No. But he certainly got it a lot. He was capable of our feelings and empathetic with our feelings and empathetic with our capabilities. He knew how weak we are. He knows how weak we are. He knows how often we fail. And so he picks us up like you would pick a rose up. Because Jesus, above all others, is aware of the consequences should he do it wrong. Was aware of the consequences if he did it wrong. And so Jesus did all these things, up to and including the cross that we talked about this morning, just enough. just enough. Perfect. Now, maybe that was easier for Jesus in some senses. Jesus could look at a man's heart and know what it was. Those things are very hard for us to do. But we have to try. If we're going to be gentle, we have to try with the proper motivation to do those things. To look in someone's heart and anticipate how they're going to respond. To anticipate just how tight to grip the pedals right now without doing damage. Knowing full well I'll have a chance to grip it again tomorrow and hopefully the next day. Knowing full well if I grip it too hard, I'll destroy it. Jesus had just enough. So was Jesus gentle? Yes, Jesus was gentle. In every circumstance as we go down through, he applied just enough of whatever was required. Just enough wisdom. Too much? No. If I told you the whole story and telling you a parable, you wouldn't understand it in a way. It would confuse you and you leave. So no. Just enough. Just enough that you would remember when I was gone. Just enough. Every circumstance that you can think of Jesus, we should hold in awe because we know how hard it is for us to be able to do and say just enough. Because every single time, it was just enough. Fortunately or unfortunately, there was one sacrifice that would save you. And there was one sacrifice that would save me. There was no cutting back on it. There was no overdoing it. It had to be just enough. A perfect individual, man, had to die for our sins. That was just enough. And he did it. And don't ever forget, while it was just enough, it was enough. It was enough. Jesus died for each one of you. We'll never be so bad that he can't accept us back. Never be so bad we can't be forgiven. Jesus gave enough. So when we lie with our last breath, we should not dwell on the regrets that we might have about our life, the things we might have said, the things we did said that were wrong, the things that we did that were wrong, our motivations were wrong. I hope we dwell on the fact that Jesus did just enough. Just enough for us. We'll offer the invitation as we stand and sing the closing song.